So now we start our program. I'm going to introduce Manny Centeno. He's with FEMA, and he's got a lot of time in the industry, more than 30 years. Shortcut, replay, DigiCart, those are just some of the things that we've all, we've all used every day. So he's going to talk about IPAWS and communications with the public before, during, and after disasters. We've all participated in the national EAS test and things like that. That's all his doing. So, Manny, why don't you come on out?
Good morning. Everybody caffeinated, ready to go? I don't think I need this mic, though. Loudspeaker. Thank you once again for having me here at the Broadcasters Clinic. I think I was here 3 years ago, maybe four. I see a lot of familiar faces and a lot of good friends. And again, great to be here with all of you. Also want to thank Wendy and Michelle for their friendship and their partnership throughout all of these years that I've been involved with the Broadcast Association, the NASBA, state broadcasters associations around the country, and so on and so forth. Thank you. So I'm not going to give you a big federal brief today. It's not my style. I want to talk more from the heart and have a dialogue with this group. Anybody here doesn't know what IPAWS is? I saw a hand back there. Everybody knows what IPAWS is. Everybody knows what the emergency alert system is. We all know how it flows, how it doesn't flow, how it works, how it doesn't work, our frustrations, our pride in it over the years. We have wireless emergency alerts that we started doing back in 2010, 2011 as we developed the system and launched it. But the EAS, for me and for us, is the backbone. It is our resilient method for reaching the public when everything else is inoperable. One of the things I want to do, and I wanted to do when I took this job over back in February, is to re-emphasize the EAS, give it a reboot. We've got to figure out how to do it better in the future. It's time. So we're going to be working with our partners at the FCC, the National Weather Service, with CISA and others, along with you, so that we can reinvigorate public warning on radio, television, cable, and satellite services. You know, we've got a potential hurricane heading up to the Gulf right now, and I'm willing to bet you money that the radio stations are going to remain on the air if it's a serious impact, as radio stations always do. Television isn't too far behind, right? It's ultra resilient, not as much as radio, but close. And all of our broadcasters care to serve our communities and that service that you provide locally. So, I know that you have a lot of questions, a lot of concerns about public warning over broadcast. And I hope that we get to talk a bit about that today. A little bit of background from me. I've got over 30 years in radio, television, and film. So, yes, I'm a federal employee, but I've been in this space for a very long time, not just as a station operator and owner, but also as an engineer. And if you own, you're selling and you're marketing. Also spent a few years in manufacturing with a company called 360 Systems. How many people here had shortcuts back in the days? Remember those hard drives? Wasn't my fault. How many of you had the instant replays? Right? Quite a few. Those were the days. We started back then doing a lot of work for Disney on playback systems. We even did the playback systems for the Bellagio in Las Vegas, the stuff that simply fires off the cannons and plays the music. I had a lot of good experience working with many of you as owners of our products and my customers for many years. Learned a lot about the industry as a developer and manufacturer. distributor, and salesman of our products. And one thing I do know for sure is that broadcasters care. How many of you here are engineers? About 50, 60%. How many of you believe that it's time to see a renaissance in radio and television? Right? We need to protect this free medium for America. It's important for every single person in this country. When it comes to public warning and IPAWS, I don't think that the public should sit behind a firewall, or that the service should sit behind a firewall, and that people should have to pay to receive timely information. Nobody should have to do that. Airwaves belong to us. Let's keep it public. Let's keep it available. So, in order to do so, we have to evolve. We have to grow. We have to come up with ways to be where people are and serve them the information that they need, and in some cases, how they wish to receive them. The world is moving fast right past us if we're not careful, right? We've got to evolve. We've got to look at these technologies that are conspiring to change our mediums. Look at them seriously as we move forward. How many of you operate digital radio systems here? Not many. Not urging you to go buy any radio digital systems right now, but that's something to look at. How many of you operate digital television? Well, everybody operates. Who's from television here? A few from television. How many of you are investing in ATSC 3.0 or thinking about it? So it's tough. It costs a lot of money, right? It's hard to evolve these technologies to make broadcasts better, more effective, more attractive to audiences and viewers in our country. But I think we are at a cross point right now, a crossroad, where we need to start thinking about the evolution of radio and television in the United States. What does that mean for public warning? Well, it means a whole lot, right? It's hard to know where we're going with public warning and EAS if we don't know where the industry's going to be in the next 5-10 years. We know we've been fighting the AM radio issue in automobiles around the country. I've been very vocal about it for quite some time. We haven't won the war yet. We've won a few battles, but we have to continue expressing our interest in keeping AM radio alive. It's a slippery slope when we remove radio broadcasting from vehicles. We start with AM, next thing it's FM, and before we know it, we're all receiving streaming that we have to pay for, and there's nothing free to the public. Those remote communities around the country, in Alaska, rural America, tribal nations, etc., need free television and radio. That's how they receive their information. And we have to become more vocal in expressing its importance. So, how many of you work with your emergency managers and first responders in your communities? Not enough, right? We've got to be more connected to those folks. My experience is that the more I connected to the jurisdictions that ran my coverage area, the less I had to go sell. And I know that that's not necessarily what you all do, but it's important to sell ads in order to pay for keeping the station on the air and serving the public interest via public safety information is extremely important. FEMA and my office invest a lot of money in radio, mainly AM radio. We have something called the National Public Warning System, as also known as PEP, or Primary Entry Point, that provides a resilient capability that reaches 90% of the U.S. population directly from these 74 radio stations. And I don't even count the population that SiriusXM, Premier Networks, and NPR provides to the country. They are part of the NPWS. And what we've been doing over the years, at least over the last 10-ish years, is improving the resiliency of these facilities. The one you're looking at here is KHKA in Honolulu, Hawaii. It's our one of our latest facilities. And you know, Hawaii is in the middle of the Pacific. It is as far as you can get in the US, very isolated, and we needed to have done this many years ago. This facility can run for 60 days straight without refueling. We have automatic oiling systems, 60 days of food and water for a couple of operators. We even have an incinerator toilet in one of those shelters that you see there. And again, this is for use when nothing else is available. Earlier this summer, back in June, we trained not only the station personnel, but also the mayor of Honolulu. First responders, police, fire, Coast Guard, emergency managers, public information officers, and they all learned how to use IPAWS better and how to use a facility like this should they need to do it. And once again, we invest millions and millions of dollars on radio. How many of you remember Warren Schultz from Chicago? Warren was a good friend, and Warren used to say that the end of the world will be broadcast on AM radio. Those of us that had the luck to know him remember that, and I always quote it because he's probably right. We miss him dearly. But anyway, I just wanted to tell you that we care about radio. We invest heavily in it. We look forward to continuing our work with you as we build stronger partnerships and coalitions to make sure that this radio television construct remains in the U.S. of A. So, we talked about training. One of the things I wanted to bring up within the context of training is partnering with your communities, your emergency managers, your first responders, so that you and they together learn how to work together when bad things happen. One of the things that I've seen throughout the country is that there is a gap between the government emergency management folks and the radio TV stations. You're often viewed as media, as reporters, as the newscasters, and sometimes get blocked from participating in response, recovery, and informing the community when bad things happen. How many of you know of the term first responders? Isn't that something that's worth pushing a little bit more than we have? It's essential that we work with our emergency managers and our jurisdictions to get information to the public on a timely basis. I don't want to keep talking too much because I want to start fielding questions and having a dialogue with you. One of the things we're working on for TV is the ATSC 3.0. We don't know where it's going to go. We don't know how the adoption is going to work. But we believe that we have to support new technologies going forward. Internet-based technologies are moving way ahead. Now we've got AI and all this stuff, right? And we can't stand there watching the rest of the world go by. At some point, we have to converge a bit. As a broadcast engineer from many years ago, I don't want things to change, right? It's the nostalgia I have for radio, especially AM, is deep. But we've got to evolve if we are to survive in radio. Take that with you take it home to your companies, to your station owners and operators. ATSC 3.0, what does it mean to us? Well, this is an opportunity to enhance the EAS, maybe come up with a best practice for better projecting, airing, broadcasting emergency information to the public, utilizing additional pieces of information that the public is going to be looking for. Maps, videos, a whole lot of other things, American Sign Language translations, languages that you might be able to click on, right, if you don't speak English. Those are the things that technology can bring us into the future. And those are the things that TV and radio stations can leverage to support the public, to enhance their products. How many of you actively participate in the emergency alert system here? And how many of you actively participate in your state plans and your state emergency communications committees? So this is one of the healthiest groups in the country that does that. But it isn't like that everywhere, right? So we're pushing hard to get the message across the different jurisdictions in the United States to urge folks, motivate them to continue participating in the EAS with all its problems and all its headaches. We can't let it go. We have to continue to support it while working on making it better and maybe looking for a replacement in the future. We're going to be working with you, with the NAB, and others to come up with new methods to provide information to the public in times of emergency. We've got to do it together. What else do I have here? All right, we talked a little bit about technologies, ATSC 3.0. We're doing a whole lot on the other side of the alerting sphere. It's where people actually generate these messages that go out to the EAS and go out to the wireless emergency alerts over your mobile phones. A whole lot of training, enhancements, new concepts are being born. And in order to get those to work right, we need the distribution pathways to work right as well. We also need your feedback. Is this information getting to you in a way that makes it actionable, that makes it something that you can easily relate to your audiences? What kind of response and feedback are you getting from your listeners and your viewers? That's not something we often hear much about. How do you feel about the stuff that you're broadcasting on EAS? So accessibility, as I mentioned before, American Sign Language and other methods for reaching those with access and functional needs is extremely important. We have a software and a user certification for alerting authorities. One of the things that I hear a lot is that it's complaints about the quality of the alerts that go out. We are working hard to teach, train, and improve how these jurisdictions use the system so that these alerts are timely and more effective. All right, so let's have a dialogue now. I don't know how much time we have left. Oh, there's a timer. We got 21 minutes. All right, so let's talk a little bit. What will you, let me ask a question first and then maybe we start this dialogue. What do you think we need to do with the emergency alert system? Anyone?
Let's try this. Hello, hello, hello.
Give that guy a mic and a Marty. Yeah. Put a receiver by
there. I'll be sending you a bill. I said, only half mockingly, I said use it because a lot of times emergency government officials don't know about it, don't understand it, are afraid to use it, and so it either sends out every single thunderstorm warning or it only sends out the end of the world and nothing in between.
Exactly. You know, we have several examples. Eddie, once you come up, I want to talk to you about something. Eddie Bertola used to be with the state of California. Come on up, because I want to bounce some things off you. Look, if you look at the Maui fires of last year, and how all other methods of communicating with the public were severely affected, smack in the middle of the emergency, what was left standing? Radio and television. How much of it was used during that, the bulk of that emergency? Very little. What does that tell us? It tells us that the folks that run these jurisdictions may not understand what broadcast is and how it works. Eddie, you're from Cali. Eddie, we're going to disclose that Eddie works with us. He's one of our consultants, subject matter experts in IPAWS, but was the first guy to send out an IPAWS alert in the state of California. So he knows a little bit about this. And don't be confused or fooled by his good looks and his soap opera star looks. Yeah. He is really knowledgeable in this stuff. Talk about the current fires.
Well, again, California's either burning, flooding, or shaking, right? And sometimes all three. And we have a lot going on right now. And the San Bernardino fires, it's only about 35,000 people evacuated. It's not a super populated area. But one thing that they are learning is they're letting people know that cell towers are down. And that's something that they didn't do for Paradise, they didn't do for other areas, is they just said, hey, we're sending you information. But now they're trying to get ahead because they've learned over unfortunate times that the most resilient form of emergency communication with the public is through your radio and television broadcasts. And so they're actually trying to direct people to those locations. And it's a lot more effective. And it's funny, I was in that position that you talked about where that person who's sending alerts, and I've sent over 100 through IPAWS, because I was sold something by those wireless companies. They did a good job. And if any marketers in here, they did it. Because they said, hey, we're the best. If you want to reach people, use wireless emergency alerts. Just focus on that. You don't have to worry about EAS. EAS is archaic. It's all these things. And for a while, that's what we believed, until we realized we weren't able to get a hold of everyone. And it's not that the wireless emergency alert's a bad tool. It's a great tool, and you need to understand all the tools in your toolbox. But it really was just this marketing or whatever it was. But one thing that's been happening even recently is that rebirth, rebranding, or an understanding of what EAS has always been and what it's going to be in the future.
You know, we value our relationship, not just with you, our broadcasters, but also our cell phone carriers, the mobile carriers, the broadband community, and others, because there isn't just a single pathway to reach the public. We believe strongly, and I believe strongly, in using all available pathways. The tools that work the best are the tools that are reaching the public. You know, I often say to folks that if I can send you an alert to your sneakers, make them light up and go rap, 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 and say something to warn you, that's what I want to do, right? We want to be there. I'd rather the public push back a little bit, say, hey, man, you're being too much, than not enough, right? We are saving lives every day with what we do, with what you do. So it's important. Radio is essential. It's the backbone of our public warning system. We've said it before. We're going to continue to support it. But we also need your help to get it to the next step. It cannot remain stagnant. Any further comments, questions?
I think one of the issues we're having is sometimes our municipal partners don't quite understand the appropriateness when they should be sending these alerts. We had an issue a couple months ago where there was a city in the state here that issued an alert about potential traffic because of an event they were holding, which would be great if it was just for that particular city, but it went out regionally over EAS. And one of the problems that causes, as I'm the SECC here, is I get flooded with emails of, we're just going to shut this off because we don't want these things. It was on our air several times. It had nothing to do with our audience. It didn't affect them at all. So part of the issue that we're having now, and some of that is outreach, like later today we're going to be going over Amber Alerts and how they work and hopefully give people a better understanding of that. But I still think that there's a little bit of a disconnect with the municipalities that are using IPAWS and the appropriateness of when to send those messages and what really dictates a good message. Because it goes back to, you know, what I always say is if everything's an emergency, nothing is. And to get an alert about a potential traffic issue because of a downtown parade or something, does that really factor into something that should be going over EAS or not? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's still kind of a, because the states handle a lot of this stuff on their own, there really hasn't been a real good blueprint as to how to lead these people in the right direction for what these alerts should be.
Very important points. Well received, and we know, right? What do we do about it? We've got to start working with those communities. We at IPAWS have started a new process to not only include the first responder, the emergency management community, in public warning subjects and training, but also to include our broadcasters. We just did it in Hawaii. We're about to do it out in Region 4 of this country, which is down in, you know, Alabama, et cetera, so that we can do this combined effort. So you and our government jurisdictions can get together and do this better. Thank you very much.
Manny, we have a text question for you.
Oh.
Okay.
What's being done to educate the public about the need to have more than one-way cell phone to access emergency information?
Good question. We have a public awareness campaign that we're putting out. How much time we have? Five?
15 okay. minutes.
How much?
15. Five. Oh, 5 minutes?
Five minutes.
5 minutes.
Before I get the hook. So one of the things we're doing is we're reaching out to the public. Often what we've done at FEMA and IPAWS is talk to our practitioners, right? The state, local, territorial, and tribal originators of messages, National Weather Service. We talked a lot with our interagency partners at the FCC, et cetera. But we don't talk a lot to the public. They don't know what's going on. And they won't know what's going on with this unless we tell them. So we're going to put out some PSAs, both radio and television. And the television ones are animated. They're kind of cute, right? They're kind of designed to kind of dig in a little bit without hitting people over the head. I'm trying not to make them too ad council-ish, if you know what I mean, right? They got to be fun. They have to be educational. But at the same time, they got to tell the story. We have a question back here.
Good morning. Paul Hughes, Wisconsin Emergency Management. I'm your state communications and warning officer at WEM. I just wanted to introduce myself to Chris's question earlier. You know, we stress to our counties and our alerting partners that EAS as a tool should be your tool when you are working multi-county incidents. And WEA should be your first choice 95% of the time. And we know that there are counties that have inadvertently clicked that. It's a problem that we continue to address, and we appreciate the partnership with all of you across the state. It's something that we continue to educate. And I really let them know, and I say, listen, if you are reaching for that EAS alert, you really need to be thinking that if it's something that's going to extend beyond your borders, you need to be calling us. Because more than likely, if you're into a multi-county event, this is a state-level type of response. So, and there is also a lot of turnover in the emergency management profession at the county level, and we are constantly having to re-educate them on the power of IPAWS and all the systems in there. So I'll be here for most of the day, bright orange shirt here, if you want to have a separate conversation. really enjoyed speaking to all of you, so thank you so much.
And that is exactly how you start that dialogue, right? Right here, right now, aggressively. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Can public safety agencies that aren't alerting authorities still issue an IPAWS alert?
So what normally happens if they're not an alerting authority, they're going to go to someone who is, and they can request it. But it's generally the alerting authority is the one who has the keys to actually turn it on. But there are a lot of entities out there within government that might be like, hey, can you do this? We have utilities and other things that are like, hey, this necessitates an alert. But so you would need to be an alerting authority for that.
So one of the things I wanted to add to that, Eddie, is you know, we have about 1,900 alerting authorities that are IPAWS customers. There are about 3,400 jurisdictions in the country. So we're kind of getting there. Not every jurisdiction is going to be an IPAWS alerter, affiliate, so to speak. And those, maybe because they're too small, there are a lot of tribal communities that have very small populations. And so they depend on their neighbors to alert for them. And that's why we stress the importance of collaboration, of coordination, of establishing friendships with the folks next door, right? Because, you know, that's going to help you. And even if you do have access to IPAWS as an alerting authority, your system may go down. Your infrastructure, telecom systems may be down at one point or the other, and you can ask your neighbor to send something on your behalf. But that requires a lot of coordination, right? Not just with those jurisdictions, but with the broadcasters and the cell phone operators in the country.
And so just to sum up a couple things that I was writing down as I've heard different things. A little bit about me, again, from California. I was with the California Highway Patrol for 15 years with the Amber Alert program and other things, so I'm looking forward to that discussion later today. There's been a change. Now, when Manny asked before, how many of you guys, and I'd like to see it one more time, are active participants in the IPAWS process? It's a trick question, because every hand should be up. Because you're either doing it, you're sending it, or you're receiving it. If you are receiving it, you are active in this process. You have experience that a lot of our population out there does not have because of where you are now. You're with the Broadcasters Association. You have a different viewpoint and perspective. You need to be able to share that so the process can get better. Wherever you think IPAWS is or was, is quickly fading because we are branching out. There's a lot of new things that are occurring, developments. The way for that to be best is to get everybody's opinions in. For the way that we used it in California, again, that became so effective was because we brought broadcasters, we brought our traditional news anchor media, we brought public entities, advocates together to say, what can we do better? For our Amber Alerts, not to steal their thunder here, we were able to get a 97.5 successful recovery rate for our abducted children within 96 minutes. Okay?
And that's a big state.
Only because of partnerships with you and with everybody else. It wasn't one emergency manager, it wasn't one entity, it was a partnership. So please, if you don't feel that, change.
We got one more text question here. How does the lower infrastructure maintenance requirement for EAS make it more resilient to privatization and partisan quarrels that would compromise it?
Say the first part of that again.
How does the lower infrastructure maintenance requirements for EAS make it more resilient to privatization and partisan quarrels that would compromise it?
How does it make it more resilient? Well, I'm gonna turn that around a little bit. We, as broadcasters, are expected to receive common alerting protocol messages. How many of you actually receive CAP messages? How many of you are ready to receive over-the-air messages from another station? Slightly smaller number, right? You know, resiliency comes in many way, in many forms. There is, of course, system resiliency, pathway resiliency, people resiliency, security resiliency. We as broadcasters understand that. And so, you know, that is, you know, whoever's asking that question, I invite them to talk to me in person, because it's a big question. CISA and the FCC have been working on security requirements that are going to, that provide a guideline, a framework for better cybersecurity for the alerting systems in this country. Extremely important. There are players out there, adversaries that want to do damage, that want to prevent our ability to reach the public and warn them of impending danger. That would be part of a miscommunication attack, right? A redirection, so to speak, of public opinion, of public reaction to something that could be happening. So it's important that we do the security resiliency, the reception, the relay, have backup systems. And I understand it, because I suffered through it as a broadcaster. I know this is an unfunded mandate, right? I've heard that term a lot. But every business has to take care of something, right? And our business is to provide information to the public and serve the public interest. So don't see it as a burden. See it as an opportunity. And we can talk some more offline about some of the resiliencies and some of the concerns, some of the contradictions that that we hear about and we see in this space. All right, thank you all so much. It's great to be with you. Enjoy the show.